seize upon the moment long ago. One breath away and there you will be, so young and carefree. Again you will see that place in time. So go.
The Outsiders is the movie based on the first young adult novel ever defined as such. Made by one of the most respected directors at the time, the actors are a who's who of who would become super famous in the 80s.
And I bet boys and girls were all daydreaming about all of these boys.
Yeah, exactly. This is 80s Movie Guide.
A guide to what's wrong with your parents. I'm Riley Roberts.
And I'm Tara McNamara. The Outsiders is about Pony Boy and his family and friends from the wrong side of the tracks. Called the Greasers, they have constant issues with a rival gang of rich kids known as the Socs.
And all of them equally have the same amount of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
No matter whose side you're on.
You know, it seems like when you see things like the Rumble and this, you know, affiliation with Switchblades and wanting to fight and wanting to, you know...
The rain and in the mud. That seems to be reoccurring in these movies.
Yeah.
Just raining, lightning, and just getting thrown around in crap.
There's also how, you know, we see Dally's first interaction with Cherry Valance, where he's sexually harassing her constantly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of that, but the film is kind of fascinating because at first glance, you're like, oh, so much toxic masculinity, because that's a term we know now that we didn't used to use. But then I'm like, I'm so taken by this film and that there's the other side of it, right? The total other side, in which the lead character, Pony Boy, is this very sensitive soul who, with Johnny, reads Gone with the Wind, you know, literature written by a woman about a strong female heroine, that they quote Robert Frost, you know, talk about poetry, write poetry. And they have this complete other side to them. And so I think the film's really about exploring toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of more of what the commentary is.
Yeah, I think it's funny that the people who were like the supposed to be the villains in this, the Johnny and Pony Boy.
Yeah, who typically, because they murdered someone.
Yes,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. They murdered someone.
They're the outlaws.
But they were the literal, they were sweeter than Cherry. Like, Cherry was even okay with getting sexually assaulted.
She was. I mean, if we're going to switch over to Cherry for a second, you know, I mean, to me, the biggest issue with the film I have is with Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see at the beginning, she's with her boyfriend, Bob, Leif Garrett. And he's the opening scene is about her, you know, him trying something with her at the drive-in and her walking away. So she's like, I'm not putting up with this. This isn't okay. I'm going to get away from them. And then she finds Dally, and
who also sexually harasses her
and who she also isn't going to put up with, right? Until
someone shows up with a car.
Well, it's just like as soon as, you know, she's like, as soon as she's being so tough and like, I'm not going to stand for that. That's not acceptable. I won't accept that kind of behavior. And then she tells Johnny and Pony Boy, well, you need to keep him away from me or else I'm going to fall in love with him. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then it becomes clear that that's, you know, more what, oh, you know, she acted like this. Do you think it means she likes me? You know, and it's that sort of thing. And that's, again, the part that how...
Rape culture starts, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's wrong with your parents that we're taught that this behavior is okay. You know, oh, a boy treats you like this. He's harassing you. He's making comments about you. He makes sexual comments about you.
He likes you.
He likes you. And isn't he just dreamy? And, you know, that's how we express...
And not trying to use you as a whole.
I mean, it really is. And that's, I think, you know, you wanted to do The Outsiders. You've wanted to do this film since we started doing this podcast.
Yeah, I want to, this, like, I saw Pony Boy. I saw Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
I saw Patrick Swayze.
Tom Cruise.
Not really, but I don't like Tom Cruise. Not my type.
He's got some weird teeth in this movie.
His teeth are messed up. And a mustache.
a mustache.
Yeah, he had like this weird pedo stash.
He did? Yeah. Oh, I didn't notice that. I just saw like his like buck teeth. It was weird.
I thought that's what I saw. They're all very attractive, so I've been wanting to do this.
Oh, that's why you wanted to do it. Okay, yes. I thought you were interested in exploring the theme.
Well, them, but also because that was their first movie, right?
Yeah, most of their first movies. Yeah, they were just starting their careers.
Yeah, like they're all babies, mm-hmm. so they're all like the closest to my age that they would ever be. Right. So like that's, you know, that's the appropriate age to daydream.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the reason I was a little, I thought all those were good reasons. The Outsider, one of the most influential books for teenagers in the 70s and 80s, and continues to be, you know. But I just, I was hesitant to do this because I think, oh, I've been trying to not cover films that actually take place in the 50s. There are so many movies they made in the 80s that take place in the 50s. This one takes place in the 60s. But because I'm like, well, aren't we getting a little confused in what we're trying to cover? But it was an important film. And I think, you know, and the other thing is when I watch these movies, I'm like, well, what am I watching that's an example of what was going on in the 50s or 60s? And what is an example? Where's the 80s-isms coming in here? Where is the filmmaking coming in and dictating something that maybe didn't exist in the 50s? So, but I think that this issue with Cherry about, oh, that means he likes you and that's okay to be treated that way. And you remember how 2-Bit like flips up a girl's skirt? I mean, 2-Bit was so obnoxious at the mm-hmm. drive-in and he's like, you know, how's it hanging? Ha ha ha, you know, and flips up a girl's skirt so you can see her underwear. Oh, I'm so funny. I mean, yes. I mean, I don't know if that boy still exists in your universe.
Yes, but they do.
He definitely existed in the 80s. And that kind of character is, I feel like, the kind of characters we see in a lot of 80s films. Mm-hmm. That sort of, you know, just obnoxious, but we're all laughing at him. And therefore, teen boys think I should act like that, too. Mm-hmm. But Cherry, in her thinking, knowing that The Outsiders was written by a teenage girl, kind of indicates that that's what she thought too, that she was observing people she saw, but in her Cherry expressing herself that way, it either means one of two things. She saw girls like that who would say, oh, but it means he likes me. And she's making a commentary on Cherry instead of, I don't get the feeling. I definitely don't get, reading interviews with Essie Hinton, it definitely doesn't seem like she identified as Cherry Valance in any way. Mm-hmm. She said she was, you know, because the question is, you've got a woman who's writing this story about guys, essentially. And that, to me, is part of the question with The Outsiders when we're covering it. Because we do have these, you know, we do see this sensitive, creative side of Pony Boy and Johnny. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, is that because that's how boys were? Or is it because this is a woman, a feminine touch here? Now, I mean, Francis Ford Coppola made the movie, but it's based on the book, and you definitely can't get away from those elements. And mm-mm. But people didn't know Essie Hinton was a girl, necessarily, right? Yeah. That's part of her using her initials, so you don't know. But she said she was a tomboy, and the authenticity of the movie is that she said, you know, this is what she saw happening in her high school in Tulsa.
Well, I think that definitely those boys exist. Like, there are definitely the sensitive ones, mm-hmm. you know, who look like they're not, but they are. Mm-hmm. That we always have that. So, but no one ever really talks about them. Mm-hmm. They're usually like, if they're in like an 80s movie, if it's a group of boys, they're usually the group of boys that are in the back, not really laughing or kind of giggling.
Right.
But never really saying anything to yeah. provoke it.
Yeah. I mean, you don't see this type of character often. You don't see,
because it's suppressed by toxic masculinity.
Right, right. And so even when you might have a kid like, you know, like, let's just go with an average Joe character like Scott from Teen Wolf, right? Michael J. Fox's character, right? I mean, he's got to win the basketball game, right? He's going to bring out the wolf so he can win the basketball game. He's still going to get the girl. You know, he's still, like, all of that stuff still exists, even in these characters that we relate to in 80s films. And that's part of what I think makes this film more extraordinary, because, I mean, the boys cry. You see mm-hmm. several scenes of the guys crying together. And I thought, that's extraordinary. This is, so I was trying to figure out, when would we put our finger on when toxic masculinity in films, not that a slow burn doesn't get you there, because it does. I mean, I was looking back, like, what would be the first character? Citizen, Charles Foster Kane and Citizen Kane is, you know, a character with toxic masculinity. So, like, you can definitely see it. I think when we get into the 70s, we definitely have these, you know, we have Death Wish with Charles Bronson, you know, where he solves everything with a gun. To me, it's kind of where it also starts coming into to using guns for everything. First Blood is in 1982 with Sylvester Stallone, Terminator. I don't know if you put Conan or Conan the Barbarian or Terminator first, but I might say Terminator for Arnold Schwarzenegger. But this is sort of coming out of the 70s where being sensitive was okay. And then this wave of toxic masculinity in the movies that we see as we go the later in the 80s, we get the more we see it. It was a backlash to the sensitivity that was allowed to men in the 70s. It was like I grew up with an album called Free to Be. And Rosie Grier, who was a big football player, you know, it was an album for little kids, but, you know, has a song, It's All Right to Cry, you know, and they also have a song on there called Billy Wants a Doll, or I think it was Billy Wants a Doll. And these ideas that, you know, about gender roles, and they were trying in the 70s. It's so funny. We're still here and we're still fighting these same fights, you know, 50 years later, 40 years later. But the allowance of that is just really interesting. And so I think that's part of what's great about The Outsiders. And if we do had a little feminine touch in there without the guys realizing it, it could only have done good things.
it probably brought a lot of emotions. This reminds me of like, what was that movie about the greaser? Like
Grease?
Town High. It was like about the greasers and the jocks, and like they fought, and it was kind of like a Romeo and Juliet
West Side Story.
Yeah, West Side Story. Uh-huh. It reminds me of like an emotional West Side Story, but about the greasers, kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it just feels like.
Yeah, I mean
the girl version of it.
Well, I think we do kind of see this story. We saw it here. You see it in Rebel Without a Cause to some degree. I mean, I haven't seen Rebel Without a Cause in a long time, but. It's in Greece. I mean, right? I mean, he mm-hmm. is literally, he and his friends are the greasers. They work on cars. There's the rich, you know, athlete that is trying to romance Sandy. So you see the social class.
But it just
doesn't
really focus on the girl in this point, which is weird because a girl wrote this and you would think a girl wants it to be romantic. No, mm-hmm. it's emotional, not romantic.
Yeah. What this film also explores that you really don't see in 80s teen films is poverty.
Yeah.
I mean, the point is none of these kids' parents are around. Like Johnny has parents who are around. They just don't care about him. And through the decades we've seen a more responsible thought process and parenting to keep a better eye on your kids. But, you know, when I grew up, they definitely would just let kids go play. Nobody kept an eye on you. You're just like, oh, stay in the neighborhood. You know, maybe don't cross that big street. But, like, you were just off run around. We all went to the pool. We all went, you know, wherever in our neighborhood without anyone. You just show up at somebody's house. We didn't have phones. And parents were just like, trust you'd come home by a certain time. And you usually would. And, you know, I mean, that was... I mean, because, right, even if you did that today, you usually would, but now we know there's people out there abducting and, you know, so
you're just more aware of it now.
Yeah, well, I don't know that there were...
It's all more paranoid.
I don't think that there were sex trafficking rings at that point in time. Not organized like they are now. Now that they're international, you know, sex
there's
trafficking rings.
There's still slave trade going on that we don't know about.
Well, true. True.
It's legal in some states.
But I'm saying, right, but I'm just saying this, I don't know. I don't know.
I'm just saying, like.
You're right. I don't know.
We thought slavery was over. Turns out it's not. We only have this hint of information, but I don't doubt for a second that, because why would it still be legal in some states? You know what I mean?
Yes.
But,
crazy.
Like, also, there's so much sex trafficking going on. It's just, I just feel like it's a lot more aware because of the internet now, because they've caught so many things through the internet.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, that's how they're doing it. No, that's not exactly how they're doing it. They've been doing it for a while. There have been abductions for a really long time.
Yeah.
The kids never come back up.
Right.
They probably are still in the ring. They're like, or their bodies are gone, but they pulled the teeth out of people before, you know, like, so that they cannot be identified. Like, there's a lot of reasons why we have a lot of Jane Does, so that they cannot be identified like that.
Yeah.
So, you don't know.
Right, you're right. We never know. You're right, you're right, you're right. And there was a lot of weird stuff in
the 60s. And Ted Bundy was in the 80s, wasn't he?
There was a lot of serial...
There was a lot of serial killers.
What I'm saying. There was a lot of serial killing going on in the 80s for whatever reason in the 70s and 80s, but...
I feel like people thought they could get away with it, because in this movie also, I know that Johnny dies, but they don't... Ponyboy never gets convicted, or like...
Or tried.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Well, at least we don't see it that far. But right, he's just... He never gets arrested.
Yeah, so, like, I feel like... Like, he didn't do anything, technically. So,
yeah.
Like, but he would still have to go on trial and go to court. You know what I mean? Like, especially now.
Right.
But, like,
I also
back
feel
then,
like... I felt like... I just kept thinking, why aren't you telling everyone it's because he was drowning your friend?
Yeah. Like,
there was a reason.
It was self-defense. Like, this was straight up self-defense.
I think part of the point is that no one would believe him. Like, for a, and this is what's missing from The Outsiders. Now, this is true to this, to you know, this is authentic to Essie Hinton's experience. So chances are there maybe weren't a lot of black kids who went to her high school. And I think, you know, schools and segregation, and even after they started segregation, it didn't mean it was in every high school. So, mm-hmm. and when it was left up to, you know, people were still living in different neighborhoods at this point. So it kind of seems true that maybe there weren't any black kids at their high school. But, you know, I did read a commentary by a black journalist who said that the lack of, like, the whole thing with The Outsiders feels insulting, because you're like, okay, so you're talking about an upper class and a lower class, but you're, you know, even then, the lower class still had more status than the black class.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, they're still white people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They still were believed.
Right. Well, I talked to your grandpa about this, my dad, who... Because he graduated from... he graduated from high school in 1961. So I was kind of curious what he thought about this and what the authenticity was. And he said, like, when he saw the movie when it came out, he felt... He said he felt really disconnected to it. I mean, he's like, maybe I missed it because, you know, I graduated in high school in 61. I graduated from college about the time that this takes place. And I was like, well, I still feel like, Dad, you'd have an awareness of... And he said what he saw was that it was very... The characters felt more like the 50s, which I think is true when you think about, like, who's the greasers, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's from Greece, which takes place in the 50s. When you think of these characters, they're in the 50s. And I can't say that this wasn't happening in Tulsa at the time. But he said that, you know, by the time he graduated, the guys all had, like, short, really, like, crew cuts. That was kind of the thing, the way everyone was wearing their hair, not greased back. And, but the Rumbles thing was real. Like, Rumble, like, guys doing the Rumbles and looking for fights and always fist fighting, that was a normal thing. But he said what, where he saw that started to go away was when Vietnam came. That, you know, really you have all this pent up. I mean, it's kind of fascinating because you think about our country and when our country comes together, and it's when we're in a war, usually. I mean, not right now. I mean, I guess because we've been in an endless war, but
we're in a war with ourselves.
We are in a war with ourselves, because it's like, we got to have someone to fight. We have to have someone to fight. And if you don't feel an immediate threat, like World War I or World War II, or, you know, or something like that, or Vietnam, where there was a definitely a war within ourselves, but it was because you had people saying, why are we in this war?
Yeah.
And so he said that by the time you get to, like, you know, mid-60s or just past, like, everyone seemed very focused on the Vietnam War and their feelings on that. They just didn't have the time or energy to fight each other anymore.
Well, yeah.
About little things.
Yeah, like, you're focused on getting bombed or not at that moment. You're not really focused on how I'm going to grease my hair back today.
Yeah. I mean...
Weirdly, even though I feel like my generation would focus on that, to not focus on what's going on.
Right.
Like, that's what we would do.
No, you're right. I mean, you guys have
dye our hair.
You guys have an avoidance strategy, you know, where you get upset at some things and then you have to go, and then you're like, okay, I feel so upset about this that I am going to then comfort myself by watching Netflix all day, or commenting on, you know, watching TikTok, or commenting on things that are kind of silly, you know,
well,
in the greater
scheme
of things.
Off of it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people especially joke about dark humor. Like, we joke about, like, I mean, it's not good. We know it's not good. We don't want to get shot up at school all the time, do we? But we do make jokes about the fact that we do get threats all the time, and we are so okay with it. Like, it's so, like, rub off the shoulder. And it's so funny, like, other countries will be like, oh, Americans, at least we don't get shot at school. Or, like, you know, like, right. It's kind of funny at this point. But it's ridiculous, but we can't help it. It's funny, like, why would you do drills of school shootings when the person that's going to be shooting up the school is most likely one of those kids?
Right, he'll know all the tricks.
Exactly. Why would you do that? Like, my school, we got a bomb threat or a shooting threat. They moved all of us to one place in the school. Why would you move all of us to one place in the school? Yeah. And it was outside, on the field. Like, open area.
Right.
And there's so many kids.
I know, where I could drive past you. Like, I would drive past you to see if I could see you.
You could do a drive-by shot. You could do a drive-by shooting by just doing that. Because it was so outside. And it was like kids were screaming because we're like, we could literally get the shot at any moment. And by the way, there's probably bombs on this field. Like, this is probably where they put the bombs. Are you kidding me?
And or the office. And by the way, if someone did start shooting, then you guys would stampede. Right? Yeah. I mean, yeah. There was stupid. A lot of logic. It was new. It was new then, you know. It was new. People didn't know how to handle school
But so,
shootings.
Like, that's how we, like, oh handle God. It at this point. We just, like, at this point, we're just laughing, like... Like, and what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? Like, convince, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, okay, so this is, So on that note, right, what this film is about, one of the issues is bullying, universal teenage experience. And then the other thing is...
These kids are walking around with knives all the time.
Yeah, they use, like, switchblades. The other thing is injustice. And... You know, this is why Dally loses it at the end, right? The injustice that Johnny just saved these kids from a burning building, that he is this sweet kid, you know, who would never hurt anybody, although, yes, he technically killed somebody, but he did to save the life of his friend, and that all of these bad things happen to this really sweet, good-hearted person who just really drew a short straw, you know, when it came to life. And so he, you know, is so upset by that he creates the scenario where he's going to get murdered.
Yeah.
But I think it's true about the teenagers and injustice, and I see, you know, I mean, it is true. I don't know if there was an era that didn't feel that way. It feels like, I mean, I would have, if I would have guessed, I would have said the early 60s. So this disproves that. But, you know, we go from this moment, right, that even though this is filmed in 1983, it was written starting around, I think, 64 or 65 is when she started writing it, when she was in high school. And so here there's just this, well, there's nothing you can do kind of feeling about it, right? And that's even the conversation that the Soch has with Pony Boy privately is, listen, you can win the Rumble. It doesn't matter. We still win life. You know, we have more advantages than you're going to have. We have everything we need to succeed, and we will succeed, and you won't because you're poor.
Yep.
And there's sort of this acceptance in a way that life is unfair. And I think that life is unfair belief has always been in humanity. And, you know, if you get a good break, good
it. But it's really annoying, especially, I feel like, not just me, all my friends feel this. And, like adults have said, like, just suck it up. Life's unfair. Suck it up. I don't want to fucking suck it up anymore.
Yeah, right.
Like, I feel like, I believe in reincarnation, and I feel like I've been dealing with this bullshit after every life. I'm tired of it. And I feel like that's why, especially my generation, is just like, why are we still doing this? It's been 200 years. Pick a fucking side. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, just pick a side. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's just people are idiots at this point. Why can't you just be okay with letting someone want to do their own fucking thing? Or like, giving, or maybe like not taking money from the poor.
Yeah.
Like, how about we not do that?
Right.
Like, that doesn't make sense, does it?
No.
Why does that make sense? It doesn't.
Right. Well,
capitalism is just idiotic at this point.
Well, that's a different issue, which is the moral fabric of society, which has completely disintegrated. About. Yeah, so in
the poor is always going to stay poor,
right?
And you're never going to be successful.
There's a cycle of poverty, which I think in the book they get more into this. Although I actually never read the book, but I believe the book gets more into this. That I think it's Soda Pop, but one of the characters, Daryl. You know, is trying to get Soda Pop to go to college. I think that's my recollection. So that he can escape the cycle of poverty. And again, back to the conversation about my dad. So the part of the reason I asked my dad about this is he grew up in a small, low economic town in Missouri. You know, not a big city, but not a country. It wasn't the country either. It was just kind of one of these, you know, a couple stoplights, towns and stuff. And he said, you know, the social class stuff, it was there, but not so much because no one really had money. But he said he graduated from high school in the lower third of his class. And, you know, being poor, you know, didn't have a ton of supervision and was kind of like that kid. And then he woke up to the fact that if he wanted to escape that life, that he had to get his act together and get into college, mm-hmm. you know? So he does that. And then to pay for it, he joins ROTC, and then he goes to Vietnam and is able to, you know, come in as an officer to hopefully, you know, improve his chances of surviving Vietnam, which worked. So well thought out plan. And, you know, but that's part of it, is there was a real realization, like if you want to escape poverty, you're going to have to really pull up by the bootstraps. But, you know, the way we were talking about the injustice and the way that people saw, oh, life is unfair, there's nothing you can do, just try to, you know, get by on your day-to-day life. So I think what we see is it starts to change. Like, and maybe this, you know, maybe we could say if we go back, because things seem to cycle in an earlier decade, but looking at the more modern history. So here we are in the 60s where this is going on. Then people go to Vietnam, right? And there's protests and there's outrage. And by the time you get to the late 60s, you know, people are just completely, every nerve is on edge. You know, people are raging, people are protesting. And then we start to see things like, you know, then there starts to be an awareness that the government is like just screwing you over. That Vietnam, they knew they could never win Vietnam, and yet they wouldn't pull out. They, you know, the Pentagon Papers, that Watergate, that the president is trying to cheat, that they, that, you know, MLK and JFK and RFK are all murdered, you know? And those are all your leaders. Those are all the guys trying to, you know, work for peace and be helpful, right? And they're just being murdered probably by the government, right? Or something. It just feels like you can't win. There's so much outrage. You can't get them to, you know, call it on the Vietnam War. You can't get all these things to stop. The government's lying to you. So you see in the sense, there's just this sense of like dread, you know, and you see it in the films and how gritty they are, because people were just like, ugh, you know, like it just felt so dark and damp. Maybe this is why the serial killer started. I don't know. Like a lack of being able to make a difference and to change things. And so it starts to come into like an almost apathetic feeling. Now you roll into the 80s, right? And so the 80s, the way that it winds up manifesting is in this, what they called the slackers, you know, like, you know, kids who are just like, you know, kind of snarky, kind of like whatever, you know, like, why should I care? Why should I lift a finger? Why should I? I'm just going to, you know, do whatever, get drunk, be stupid. I mean, so now when we look at the 80s, we're like, oh, it was this carefree time. Well, yeah, because there was no war and we started doing better financially. But there was this sense of, you know,
hopelessness.
Well, a rebelliousness. I mean, a rebelliousness in a different way. It wasn't a rebelliousness like I'm going to protest. It was the opposite. It's what we see in film where there's this attitude of upending authority. Like, I don't believe anything you're saying. I don't, you know, I'm just an average guy and I'm going to succeed by being, you know, rude and gross and sexist and just be who I want to be, because why should I care?
Yeah. Well, that's true, but I feel like...
It's a fuck it all. That's what it is. It's a fuck it all attitude.
Yeah. But that's honestly... But that's the best kind of... I feel like that's kind of the best kind of film, though, in a way. Is when it's fuck it all energy, because it is, at the end it doesn't really matter, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And it's just for... But, like, that kind of has... Maybe that's why these 80s movies were so good, and why people were obsessed with them, even though they were sexist, even though they were racist. People were still... Like, I bet you there were still black people that were obsessed with movies that had hella racism in it, maybe. Like, uh-huh. Just because they were popular movies and they were good movies. Like, like, there's plenty of movies I love that are so sexist and so, like, women are objects.
Uh-huh.
We've seen them all here. Like, yeah, but right. I don't not like the movie.
Right.
Like, which sucks, but...
Yeah.
In a way, like, that's not what makes a good movie. There's a lot of fucked up things in movies. But I think maybe that's why why 80s movies are so good. Is because it kind of gave hope back to your generation, which is probably why you're so obsessed with them, because that kind of... You guys didn't have, like my generation as middle school, high school girls, teenage girls who were obsessed with boy bands went on Wattpad and read fan fiction about the boy bands, like, them meeting at a concert and them taking them back to the hotel room. You guys didn't have that. You had movies.
Uh-huh.
You had to have the visuals, because, like, you could make it up with in your head, like a book, but that's boring. That's boring.
Well, I read a lot of books, too, but yeah.
Well, the visual's always better, right. Isn't it? But, like, in Wattpad, they would always make...
Yeah.
Would make fan
well,
art.
Movies are more escapist, and they create the environment for you. So they fill in, you know, the set design, the makeup, the hair, the, you know, the beauty of, you know, the actors. I mean, all this stuff, it kind of delivers it to you in this beautiful package. And you know, so, I mean, they both have their advantages.
Yes. But either way, there are still many men that are in movies that are very disgusting in the movie, but I still find them very attractive. Yes.
Part of what makes The Outsiders hold up is, and what she tapped into, is the fact that all teenagers, I mean, if not all humanity, but definitely all, like, teenagers feel like they're outsiders, even in your own clique, right? Even in your own group. I mean, I went to 3 different high schools and I moved all the time when I was a kid. So even when I had a group, you know, I never quite felt like I didn't grow up with them. Mm-hmm. They all had stories from 3rd grade that I didn't share. And I found that, like, as I've grown up, that I, you know, like, I just don't ever feel like I fit in. Wherever I work, I'm the one who, like, I worked at Variety, but when I worked at Variety, they were all entertainment journalists, and I was, like, the radio girl, like, you know, and I did radio while they were all kind of covering the stories, or, you know, when I worked at Playboy, like, they were all doing, like, sex, like, really sex-oriented content, and I was, like, doing a dating show. They called me PG-13. Like, you know, when everywhere that I've worked or anywhere that I've been, I've always been, like, in high school, my friends were all Jewish, you know, in Oklahoma City. So they were kind of, you know, outsiders to most of Oklahoma City. But then I was the Christian hanging out with the Jewish kids in a Christian community. So I was as far removed as possible. But, I mean, that, I think, you know, you've told lots of stories to show that that is kind of the case for you as well.
Yes. In a lot of the cases.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't judge people off their appearance
mm-hmm.
or, like, their taste in things.
Mm-hmm.
I judge you off if you're racist, sexist, or rude to people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or gross, or rapist. Or,
you know, and then the social class thing is something I don't remember in any school ever that there was a divide in social groups based on someone's family's income or where they lived. In talking to my dad, he's like, well, you know, we did that intentionally. You know, we specifically lived places where everyone was kind of on the same economic sphere so that you wouldn't feel those differences. But I know you felt that at your first high school, that they were there definitely was. I mean, by the way, no one at your first high school was poor. Like, no one was living in poverty.
That's not necessarily true. We had a couple people from Hawthorne.
Oh, okay.
And Inglewood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was, like, at least 2 people from Compton.
Okay.
But that were, like my ex, he was from Hawthorne, but he got jumped. So he got transferred by 8 guys. So he got transferred to that school.
Oh.
So he's, so.
Okay.
But it was a lot, it wasn't as much for guys. It was, I feel like it was more for girls, but there's definitely a, the rich kids, because they have the big houses that they can throw parties at, and their parents don't really give a shit about them, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And in my opinion, mm-hmm. or their parents are just drunks. Uh-huh. Most of the time it's that. So they're just like, okay, like, kids can get drunk as well, even though they're 15. We're just gonna give them alcohol.
Yeah.
And let them throw parties. And then you have, I would say, like, the stoners, the rich stoner kids. I would say that they were also kind of, like,
I think
the
rich kids weren't smoking pot. I thought the rich kids were doing everything else at that school.
No, everybody smokes.
Yeah.
Everyone smokes.
Yeah.
There's not one person. Like, if you don't like smoking, you're probably weird.
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm not going to agree with that. But I will say, but I thought that the rich kids were doing all the other, I mean, I thought that was the one thing about that high school. When I started asking around about other high schools, I found that maybe they all had one other drug that they kind of as a school would do.
Oh, yeah. The rich kids like Coke and Molly, definitely, because mm-hmm. they like to go to raves.
Mm-hmm.
I think raves are so annoying, but mm-hmm. that's just me. Also, why would you go, like, bare naked to a very cold place? You know what I mean? Like, that sounds so uncomfortable to me.
I know. I remember that time you were talking me into taking you to the warehouse party by LAX.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't, this can't be right. And you're like, no, everybody's going. And I'm like, no. And I drop you off and I see that there are all these kids. And I'm like, how is this legal and I was the only parent. Everybody else was coming in an Uber.
I feel like,
I don't know if that makes me worse of a parent.
No, at least you knew where I was. But like,
I was like, call me.
that was like the parties for like the, like, cause the popular rich kids would come to those, but they would only show up for like 20 minutes because they had money for Uber. They always had a house to go back to.
Yeah.
But like me and my friends, we didn't have a house to go back to. We were just there. We were just there seeing what was going to happen. Cause usually there was drama. There was a fight. Uh-huh. There was something goes down most of the time.
Yeah.
And you kind of want to, I kind of just wanted to be there to see what happens.
Uh-huh.
And, but also a lot of people would go to those to work up their party credibility to where you would just assume that that person's coming and be like, hey, are you coming to this party? And if they didn't even know about the party, they would now show up because you just told them about that party.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like a weird work your way up kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You get bored of it after a year. It's really mm-hmm. boring.
Well, I remember you telling me when you were trying to defend the reason to smoke pot is you said that it was the great equalizer.
It is the great equalizer.
Mm-hmm.
It is the great. That's actually very true.
that you said, you know, you go out and you're smoking and then somebody who's super popular and rich or whatever would come out and you guys would talk.
That's very true. Yes, because that's extremely true. I forgot about that. Yeah, you would pull out something and then they would, but it was more of like they would see what you're doing and they didn't have it or they didn't have any on them.
Yeah.
Or they just didn't want to share with anyone. So they're like, I kind of know this person. So they kind of grab you and they're like, hey,
friend.
And like most of the time, stoners are never going to be like, I mean, like, people are stingy with their stuff, but if we're friends and we're talking, they're most likely going to be like, you want some
uh-huh.
or something like that. But if you say no, they're not going to be like, why? They're going to be like, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not, there's never really a fight going on in that situation.
Yeah.
And then you talk for 5 minutes, they get what they wanted out of it, they probably get their hits, you get a nice conversation, you have someone now who's in your class that you could walk up to and just start talking to now.
Mm-hmm.
It is the great equalizer. And anybody could come up to you, too. Like, it doesn't have to be necessarily a popular kid.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, like, I looked up to the kids in the grades above me,
mm-hmm.
personally, just because I watched them from a distance. So, like, because I was always at the parties.
Mm-hmm.
So I always saw them. So I kind of always looked up to them, because they also knew what they were doing way, obviously, more than I did, because they were older and had been doing this for a year longer. But, so, I would always, if it was one of my friends who's a year or two older than me, that's what I was going for.
Mm-hmm.
But, not for necessarily conversation, but
yeah. Well, I think that does it with The Outsiders.
Yeah, just toxic masculinity. It honestly wasn't that bad of a movie. I feel like this is kind of an okay movie to, like, for a son and father to watch.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like.
Yeah.
Like, it's worthy enough, but at the same time, the father would need to tell him not to feed into, be like, this was the 50s.
Right, right.
This was the 50s.
Right.
This was the 50s.
And don't treat girls like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, because that's why I like this movie, because they don't really, like, yes, there is the sexual harassment. Yes, yes, they show Cherry and all that. But they only do show her for 5 to 10 minutes, and it's not about her.
No, it's about not. The boys. But you did mention while we were watching the movie that Cherry is toxic.
Oh, she's so toxic. Shit, that was so disgusting of her. To get out of the car, say we're done, then Dally's sexually harassing her. He's way hotter than Bob, in my opinion. and she says no to him. And then, okay, and then is walking around with these 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
Might I add. Who are protecting her, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And then the older guys pull up, and she's like, oh, well, I don't want to fight, so I'm going to be the bigger person, and I'm going to go be with the douchebag instead of just defending you and telling him to fuck off.
Yeah.
I'm going to actually just go sleep with him and probably suck his dick. And then she leaves and says, oh, and before she leaves, she goes, by the way, if I don't say hi to you ever, don't take it personally. Mm-hmm. I just can't be seen with you.
Yeah.
Like, you're just not, but you're sweet, but...
Yeah.
This never happened. That's toxic.
I know. But then she's the go-between, right? She's the spy, as Dally calls her.
That's not really being a good person. An in-between is never... They're never a good person. There's a reason they're in-between.
Yeah.
And it's because she's weak.
Yeah.
She's weak.
Yeah.
If there's a reason she's a spy. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because she wants to help them but doesn't feel... But do you not think that's because she's a woman, because she's a girl and she has less power in this point in time, in this point in history, might have less power in the whole scheme of it?
Well, the only way it would make her not a bad person is if she was basing it off the fact of her family. Mm-hmm. Because obviously in the 50s, if you're one of the rich people in the rich neighborhoods and you're out with a poor person who's a greaser,
uh-huh,
at the time, that's kind of not good rep, right? And a lot of us were focused on reputation for some reason back then. But, like, if she was trying to defend womanism and stop the sexism and the sexual harassment, all of the greasers would have fought for her.
Yeah.
So... It's not like that, like, just because she's a woman, yes, she now has a target on her back from these jocks.
Yeah.
But it's not like she has no protection. It's not like she's defending nothing. She now has a whole group of greasers who are the tougher ones, by the way. The ones with knives, by the way.
Uh-huh.
And the ones that actually know how to handle shit.
Yeah.
Like, in my opinion, because they grew up at a young age, which is why they act out.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
Right, right.
And... Pony Boy would have, even though he was 14, he would have not let anything happen to her. And his brother, and with that, you now have his two brothers, and then you have the whole group. So, she would have been fine.
Yeah, yeah.
It was literally just to defend her reputation.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is being, that's a shit thing to do.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because I don't know why you guys were so focused on reputation, especially because we were at war.
Well, I mean, it comes from your parents.
No, but, I know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why we're all focused on being Christian and, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And not dirty and, you know what I mean? Well, like, why was rock music, so it rock starts, music is devil's music?
Well, yes. I mean, it goes all the way back then. But remember, the pill is what starts to allow these things to change. The thing is that parents had to... I mean, all this stuff about girls being slutty and girl whatever, but, like, it always starts with the fact that parents are trying to get their daughters to not have sex because their daughters might get pregnant, and then it's always the girl's problem. In these times, the guys did seem to find a way to get away. The guy's reputation wasn't ruined. The girl's reputation, then she has to find someone to marry her, because back then there were very few options for women. So, like, the whole notion of, like, gold diggers even comes from the fact that, yeah, you needed to marry rich. I mean, for survival. Your husband dies. What are you going to do? Be a prostitute? Probably. I mean, you know, like, yeah. you're in the, I mean, now I'm going way back in time, but like, well, yeah, no, your options. So when this notion of girls fighting each other for a guy, well, that's because, I mean, it was like pure survival at one point in time, but it's not anymore. Thankfully. All right. Well, I guess stay gold.
I also now have a very big obsession with Ponyboy. Like, I've always seen him and all, like, the, because people make edits of, like, The Outsiders all the time, and I always saw Ponyboy, but then he was obsessed with Gone with the Wind, and I'm named after Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, your name's Scarlet, actually, right? And I'm Tara, so, right?
Yeah, so I was like, ooh, I just found my new crush.
See Thomas Howell. Riley's coming for you. Well, I'm Tara.
I'm Riley.
And this is 80s Movies, A Guide to What's Wrong with Your Parents.
You can follow us on social media. Mm-hmm. You can also check our website out.
And that's at 80s Movie Guide, or our website is 80smovieguide.com. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe and like.
And give us suggestions on what to do next.
Thanks. Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, we'd love to hear your opinions on these things as well. This is a discussion. So please add your comments on our social media. That'd be great.
Maybe not hate.
Yeah, you can maybe cut criticism. Back on the hate. You can cut back on the hate. We're open to your ideas, too. But I guess that's just the world we live in.
Yeah,
now,
it's, well, grown adults fighting 19-year-olds. Yes, that is the world we live in.
All right. Stay gold, all. Imagine all things that happen will age too old, though gone.